This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services License 540697.
Equity Mates.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a massive welcome. My name is Bryce, and today we're checking in on a couple of the big IPOs in the world of social media. We have Pimp My Portfolio returning and Book Club is back as well. To chat through it, as always, is my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. We have a lot to cover. So I'm going to start with a question for you.
Okay.
How many shares of Truth Social do you own right now?
Thankfully, none. How many do you own?
None. But good. That is good. Big news of the week. So as always, let's start with our stick.
News and markets.
That's right. It feels very newsreader official when you hear that.
Yeah, kind of packed my back up a bit.
So a lot of news in the world of investing. And what we wanted to do to start this episode was really circle back to some news stories that we've spoken about previously. Mm. So we spoke about Boeing a couple of weeks ago, and there's been news there. We spoke about Reddit's IPO, and we actually both made predictions about how it would go. So yes. We'll check in on that and talk about how that social media IPO has gone. But where we want to start is another social media IPO, and that is Donald Trump's Truth Social has gone public.
That's right, Ren. Donald Trump's social media platform, Truth Social, is now listed on the NASDAQ, ticker DJT, after it was...
Hold on, let's pause on the ticker.
Yeah.
Donald John Trump,
Donald DJT. John Trump, yes.
He's good at self-promotion.
Oh, yeah, very good. Great branding. As I said, they've merged with a company called Digital World Acquisition, a shell company. This was done through a special purpose acquisition company or a SPAC, and that's how they've listed.
Yes. And if that's confusing, don't worry, because the long and the short of it is now a publicly traded company. Mm. Truth Social, well, the parent company of Truth Social is Trump Media and Technology Group Corporation, because they have ambitions beyond this social platform, which we can touch on in a minute. But it is publicly traded and it reached, I think, even a little bit higher than $8 billion US dollar valuation.
So it popped. It definitely popped. And Donald Trump, it coincidentally came at a time where Donald Trump was trying to fork out almost $500 million for a bond that was due through his trials in court. At the time, I think he owns about just under half of the company or thereabouts.
So when it was $8 billion, his stake was worth $3 billion.
So
just under half.
So multi-billionaire. However,
he can't sell for 6 months. His shares are escrowed or locked up for 6 months. So he's not liquid at the moment.
No, he's not. And this one also came out of nowhere for me. I didn't know that it was this close to an IPO. Like, I didn't know this was on the cards. And so for me, like, I was just like, oh, wow, this has just come out of nowhere. However, over the weekend, overnight, their financials were released And it's not good news. The stock fell 20% after it was revealed that the company lost almost $60 million last year, and an auditor disclosed substantial doubt, quote, over its ability to continue operating.
Mm. So it made $4.1 million in revenue in 2023, and it made a loss of $58 million. Mm. And so the question is, how much money does it have on its balance sheet? So I had a look at Ticker, ticker.com/equitymates, if you want to jump on. It's a really great source of company-level information. According to Ticker, it has $1.84 million in cash on its balance sheet.
Million,
wow. Not billion. Yeah. That sort of puts the auditor's comment in perspective.
Absolutely. Substantial doubt over its ability to continue operating. So I guess one to watch. I've never been on the platform. Don't intend to go on it. Don't intend to own any stock. But Donald continues being Donald. Always makes the most of a PR opportunity.
So before we move on, I just want to put my tinfoil hat on for 1 second and just make it very clear that this is all conspiratorial and not at all proven.
Okay.
So Jeff Yass is a major Republican donor and a major shareholder in ByteDance, the owner of TikTok.
Yeah.
TikTok obviously in the news because the US government is trying to force a sale
of
TikTok.
Yes.
Jeff Yass becomes a major shareholder in
Truth Social
just as it goes public, helps it get this massive valuation. And around that same time, Trump also comes out and says he opposes the sale, the policy to force a sale of TikTok.
Wasn't it his idea in the first place?
Even though it was his idea when he was president. So connect those threads as you will if you want to connect those threads.
Love a conspiracy.
It's just creates, this whole financial situation creates these possibilities. And, you know, Trump's out there selling sneakers and
Bibles.
Yeah. And anyway, it's a recipe for challenges. In the same way that, like, in his last administration, there were stories of, you know, the Saudis booking out Trump hotels for months longer than they were staying there. Now people can pump stock. Take the tinfoil hat off, move on. Let's talk about Reddit.
And there's no greater juxtaposition here, because when you have a look at Reddit's valuation, I think it's currently sitting around $7.5 billion. It does $804 million in sales. Compare that to Truth Social's $4.1 million. So yes, last time we spoke about the IPO for Reddit, we both put some predictions on the line as to what would happen on day one and then how it would finish by the end of the week. So Ren, you said that on day one it would pop up to 15% and then end the week flat.
Mm-hmm.
I said that it would pop greater than 20%. And finish the week down.
So,
who
was right?
Well, day one, it popped 48%.
Yes.
Huge IPO. It's listed at $34 and closed to the day at $59.80. And Sam Altman, actually, who's one of the major shareholders, his stake went from $200 million to $618 million on day one.
Yeah.
But it then did end the week, and Thursday to Thursday, it ended the week down just on 2%.
Okay.
So we were both pretty much in the same ballpark. So it's currently trading at about $46.
Yep. So still up from where it IPO'd.
Still up from the IPO price, down from the obviously the close.
So if that's confusing for people, it's like when they go to investment banks and in shareholders before it actually lists on the share market and they raise money, they were selling shares at $35 a share.
Yeah.
But then when it starts trading as a public company, the price is just set by the market, and that first trade of someone selling their shares and someone buying them was around $50.
Yeah.
A share. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, we'll keep an eye on it. I haven't bought any stock. I don't think I intend to right now. You were sort of bullish?
I'm very bullish on Reddit. Yeah. I don't own anything, but it wouldn't surprise me if I do buy some.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I think of the social media platforms, it's got like an incredibly rusted on user base. I think it's got really interesting opportunities to grow and to monetize. The challenge with Reddit is a similar challenge, I guess, with the, like Discord would have, which is like, can it reach mainstream usability and acceptance. Yeah, yeah. Like, will our parents ever use Reddit? Probably not. Will our parents use Instagram and Facebook? Probably. Like, so the question is just how big can it be? But Redditors are loyal. Like, you don't have a much more rusted on, and I count myself amongst them. Like, you don't have a much more rusted on user base than Reddit.
Yeah, they've done well. And they offered 75,000 of their most rusted on users stock in the company, which I think is just such a great idea. But then closing out some of the news that we've touched on over the last couple of weeks, Ren, we spoke about the downfall of Boeing. You have an ick. Boeing gives you the ick.
Yep.
But you know, we spoke about the opportunity that it might be presenting from an investment point of view, you know, looking at those companies that are down and out, but also the strategic position that it has with the US government and the fact that it's just in a duopoly and those sorts of things. Since speaking about it, the CEO, Dave Calhoun, stepped down. Yeah. He'll be leaving at the end of the year. He was only 4 years into the job, stepped in 2019, but just wasn't able to... stepped in at an incredibly tough time, to be honest. COVID hits as he starts, but still wasn't able to get on top of the manufacturing issues. We've spoken about the safety mishaps, so I think it was more just a you need to go. And then also their board chair, Larry Kellner, has told the company that he doesn't plan to stand for re-election. So moves continue to happen. We sort of said that we might not have been at the bottom of Boeing yet, but it looks like they're putting things in place to try and turn the ship around.
Yeah.
Or should I say plane?
I would love to be the CEO that comes in now, because it's like, it's pretty obvious what they have to do. It's like, forget the financial engineering, focus on actual engineering, reassure their customers of their safety record, invest heavily in like really robust safety checks, manufacturing process. And you could just imagine that, like, a CEO that refocuses on product, like how invigorated the team and workers would be to be like, all right, like what we're doing is now the center point of this company. And you've got a massive brand, you've got a massive order book, you've got really strong relationships around the world, you've got the implicit backing of the US government. Like, in terms of a turnaround story, there's a lot tougher turnarounds in the world of business than what you have to do at Boeing.
Yeah.
One fun fact, Dave Calhoun, he might be gone, but he will certainly be cheering on Boeing from the sidelines, because even just his 4 years as CEO, he has $51 million in stock options and grants that ride on the share price reaching like certain milestones, or, you know, he would only exercise his options if it reaches a certain price. So, you know, he may not have been there for very long, but he 51 million reasons that he hopes the company does well.
Wow. And
if it does, that certainly sets him up for the rest of his life.
Definitely. Yeah.
This is Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
We're back with Pimp My Portfolio. We've got our expert, Luke Larrative from Seneca. Luke, how are you?
Good, Bryce. How are you, mate?
So the purpose of this segment, we have community members submitting your portfolio so Luke can put his critical eye over it to suggest some ways that we can think about improving our portfolios. We have so many submissions, and today we have one coming in from Claire. She's not on the line, but has asked if we can go through her portfolio regardless. So as always, we'll start with a bit of a breakdown on what her portfolio looks like. Ren?
So this one is a easier one to unpack. There's five positions, four of them are ETFs, and then there's one individual stock. So we've got NDQ making up 60% of the portfolio, the NASDAQ 100 ETF. And then we've got ACDC, I think that's a Global X.
It is.
A renewable battery, energy renewable and batteries.
Yeah.
Power ETF, 23% of the portfolio. So those two together are 83% of the portfolio. Next up, we have Semi, which is the Global X semiconductor ETF, 11% of the portfolio. VDHG, the Vanguard Diversified High Growth ETF, makes up 6%. So for people playing along at home, that's 99% of the portfolio. And then finally, making up the final 1% of the portfolio is an individual stock, AVH, which is Avita Medical. So, Luke.
What's the name?
Oh, the name of this one is ND, excuse me.
ND, excuse me.
Explain that.
Well, like 60% of your money in NDQ.
Yeah.
So, look, I don't mind NDQ as an ETF. You know, you guys know I'm not the biggest ETF lover in the world, but it's concentrated, you know, it's kind of giving you high sensitivity to a lot of those tech names. It's got some decent weights in it, so like, it, you know, some stock moves actually matter. Mm. It's not the worst product out there. The fees on it are reasonable. So yeah, it's not the worst product out there. That being said, 60% of your money tied up in tech is, as much as tech's fabulous and blah, 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 is not where I would want to be. Like I've sort of been saying, I like diversified sources of growth, and that is really, you know, a relatively undiversified source of growth. Mm. You know, there's lots of good things happening in Indian equities at the moment. There's lots of good things happening in value, European value stocks. There's lots of good small and mid-cap ideas that haven't been part of the equity market rally we've seen, you know, broadly driven by, you know, 7 or 10 stocks. So I think that having diversification in your portfolio at a macro level, you know, asset classes aligned with your risk profile is really important. But if you are going to run 100% equities, you need to be sourcing those returns from multiple varied sources geographically, but more importantly, stylistically. Mm. And I think that's where everyone kind of goes a little bit wrong.
So I guess the starting point there is probably to look at NDQ and VDHG, the Vanguard Diversified High Growth. Vanguard Diversified High Growth is 6% of the portfolio. NDQ is 60% of the portfolio. Yeah, if you just flipped those, that would kind of answer some of what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I would think for ETFs, it's probably excessive in my view. And I hate, I know you guys always tell me not to do this, but this is the perfect example of someone who probably could just have a look at one holding in a multi-asset ETF and be done with it.
Mm.
Diversify those gains that you've made and find something that's more sustainable for you long-term, until the point maybe where you find another thing that you want to sort of chase, something shiny in the corner of your eye. But it's not necessarily what you have to do. There's no reason you can't just stick with that core only type approach. And I'm about it. I like the discipline. I like the edge being, you know, you're more patient than the average investor and you're more disciplined than the average investor. And I think that works long term as an edge.
So for Claire and for many other people in this situation where they find themselves, for whatever reason, maybe it was the first stock they bought and it's just ripped, you know, they're very overweight and now the suggestion is you need to transfer a bit of that to some more diversified positions. The VDH position, as Ren said, is only 6%. The following question then is, are you saying the best approach is to sell out, or is it anything that is, I guess, now allocated to the market should just be going in? How do you think about approaching that?
It really depends on Claire's situation, to be honest, and it's probably on the scope of what we're trying to do today. I think the concept is to understand that, you know, as we've talked about recently, it's not all ETFs are made equal, not all ETFs are diversified, and not all ETFs are index tracking in the pure sense of the sort of the theoretical ETF that we talk about. So I would just like to see people with gains in stuff that they, hand on heart, just don't really understand or know why they've made money, be fortunate enough to say, hey, I've made money here by the good graces of, you know, the world of luck, and now I want to lock those gains in and let them compound for me for 20, 30, whatever years, right? Mm. And I think that's where people get caught, is that they have trouble selling. And my personal approach with my own money is, when something's expensive, it's gone.
Mm.
You know, and like I've said before, on the 44th day, not on the 364th day, but it does matter, the tax side of it, but not as much maybe as probably people put weight on it. I'm quite happy to pay tax. It means I've made money.
Yeah,
And we don't all have Cayman Islands shell corporation structures to avoid tax like you do.
Mate, you leave my Cayman structures out of this, all right? I don't want the ATO coming after me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the challenge. All things being equal and tax not being a factor, you would say rebalance
hard
tomorrow.
And but, you know, get to your ideal portfolio as quickly as possible. Yeah. I've said it on this pod before and I'll continue to say it. If you've you've been on a journey of learning and going up the skill curve, for lack of a better word, in investing as a topic, don't be afraid to put it all to work. There's no point learning shit if you don't apply it. You know, it's no good in the textbook. It's got to be in your portfolio. So get to that ideal portfolio ASAP.
Now, one final question, Luke. Aveda Medical, the one individual stock position. Have you heard of the company? What do you think?
Yes. I like to invest in my zone of competence. Biotech, healthcare tech probably just isn't in that zone. Mm. So I've heard good things about it. I've heard not so good things about it. I don't know. It's never something I've owned. I've never owned any of these type of, whether it's PolyNovo or this or Mesoblast or any of these kind of stocks. I've never owned them. I don't do it. There's other places to make money. There's other ways to make money in the markets. And I just choose not to make money that way. Mm. In the same way, I, don't invest in lots of other types of companies too.
Mm. Nice. Well, the takeaway here for Claire, good start, but redistribute some of that weighting towards some more diversified ETFs, the VDHGs in the portfolio. So thank you to Claire for submitting her portfolio. If you'd like to submit and either come on the show or just have Luke, Ren and I chat through it, head to equitymates.com/contact. All the information is there. Similarly, if you'd love to sit down with Luke in your own time and get him to look at your portfolio in a bit more detail, head to equitymates.com/advice. And we will connect you. As always, Luke, thanks for your time. We'll pick it up in the next Pimp My Portfolio.
Looking forward to it.
Pimp My Portfolio. Pimp My Portfolio.
So we're going to take a very quick break, and on the other side, we are unpacking the book of the month, The Widow Clicquot. So we'll be right back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Equity Mates. It is time for
Book Club. Ren's reading the book, so Bryce doesn't have to.
That's it. I've been watching YouTube this month. Ren's been reading books.
What have you been seeing on YouTube?
The usual stuff remains. I'm deep into the world of people renovating chateaus.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I've found one. I've found a guy who's now doing a multi-story chateau in France solo. It's just amazing. Yeah, I just don't understand how these. He has a kid, has a wife, has two kids, has a wife.
Well, I mean, is this his full-time job though?
It definitely looks like it.
Yeah, so he's just filming.
YouTuber.
Is he a builder?
Well, he definitely has the. Yeah, yeah. He definitely looks like he has the. Like he has all the tools.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just amazing though. Like he's there, sunrise to sunset, taking revenue from YouTube.
Yeah.
Building a chateau.
But also, would be building a chateau and then selling it. Is that the idea? Because, people flip houses in Australia as well.
This is not your this is not your casual flip, though. This thing, this is a year's project. I'll be watching this guy till I'm 40.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no, I doubt he'll, I think he'll live in it. But anyway.
All right, well, stay tuned for Chateau, mate. It's coming soon.
Well, that'd be awesome.
But, Bryce, let's stay in France for Book Club, because the book that I think you didn't read it.
No.
That I read this month, suggested by Amy, who filled out the form at equitymates.com/contact and suggested this book. So thank you, Amy, because it was a cracker. I really enjoyed it, and I hadn't heard of it. It's called The Widow Clicquot, The Story of a Champagne Empire and the Woman Who Ruled It by Tillard J. Mazzio. So all about champagne.
Nice.
And the rise of champagne in the late 1700s, but more early 1800s.
And so was Clicquot the
were they like the first leading champagne brand?
They were one of. Right. So one of the Widow Clicquot's contemporaries was Jean-Remy Moët.
Oh.
A name that might sound familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
So for people who don't drink a lot of champagne, Clicquot probably familiar.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, with what brand?
Verve.
Yeah, Verve Clicquot.
Yeah.
Do you know what the French word for widow is?
Verve.
Verve.
Widow Clicquot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it's literally the Widow Clicquot is brand name. And this is the woman, Barbe Nicole Clicquot Ponsardin, I think that's her full name, is the woman behind it. Before we get into the story, and because I got some fun facts, and then there's some, like, broader business lessons that we can take out of it, but just a little bit of the history of champagne.
Nice.
So whilst the French claim that they invented sparkling wine, and there's this whole narrative about Dom Perignon, who was a friar in the Champagne region who made wine, sparkling wine.
Yeah.
That was a story actually invented for like the World Fair in Paris in the late 1800s to give champagne an origin story. The French would hate me for saying this, but it was actually the British that invented champagne. And there's pretty strong historical information at the time that whilst the French, including Dom Perignon, were desperately trying to stop wine fermenting and take the sparkle out of wine.
The French were trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Yeah, the British were trying to give it a second fermentation and make wine sparkling wine.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a little fun fact. We just lost all our listeners in France.
Dom Perignon.
Perignon
was trying to make it. He's credited as making it.
Yes.
But he was actually trying to do the reverse.
Yes.
Yeah,
gotcha. Yes. He was one of, like, all winemakers were trying to make their wine, not sparkling wine.
Yeah.
Because the way that you make champagne is you make it wine.
Yeah.
And then you add more sugar or molasses. No. basically more sugar. And then the bacteria then eats that and it's like a second fermentation and it's sparkling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of the history. Also, another fun fact, widows have a massive history in the world of champagne. So there's the Widow Clicquot, which is what this book is about. And then there's Louise Pommery.
Oh, yeah.
Familiar with that brand?
That's nice.
So she was a widow in the 1850s and 1860s. And the fun fact about her is, before Pommery, the champagne that was being made is very different to the champagne that we drink today because it was so much sweeter. And it was particularly a lot sweeter for the Russians because the Russians loved sweet champagne. And that was where a lot of the export sales out of France were going in the early days to Prussia and to Russia.
So no dry crisp.
No, the Brut champagne that is like the conventional one that most of us drink today at weddings and stuff like that was made for the British palate because the British didn't want it as sweet. And that was Louise Pommery's innovation. She made the Brut and she opened up the British market as a major export market. So she was another widow in the champagne world. And then also Lily Bollinger in the 1940s. She didn't really create her company. But she grew it a lot, another widow. So just a quirk of history that some of these big...
Good to understand, where these brands have originated from.
Mm.
Yeah.
So to turn to the Widow Clicquot story, to give you the context, from 1790 to 1830, champagne sales across the industry increased almost 1,000%. They went from a few hundred thousand bottles a year to over 5 million bottles a year in that 40-year time period. And then by the turn of the 20th century, so by 1900, it was 20 million bottles a year. And a lot of that growth in the industry was driven by this woman, the Widow Clicquot. She is really known for three things: internationalizing the champagne market, establishing brand identification in champagne, and then finally she developed a process known as roumage, which is to clear the yeasty debris trapped in the bottle after the secondary fermentation. Not something that you want in your wines.
No.
So she's known on like the business side and then also on the winemaking side, and that's part of why she's such a legend. But she wasn't the only person famous name getting around at that time. Some of her contemporaries were, tell me if these names sound familiar, Jean-Remy Moe.
Yes.
Pierre-Gabriel Chandon.
Yes.
Jules' mum.
Yes.
Louise Roeder.
No, I don't know that one.
I think that's, yeah. Charles Heidseck.
Yeah.
Don't know how to say that one. And then Louise Pommery.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
All of those were getting around in the early to mid 19th century, so like 1800s. And that was really when the world globally went from family businesses to industrialization. Mm. And the same thing happened in the wine and the champagne business. And a lot of the big champagne houses we know today started at that
all
time.
All those, yeah.
So number one business lesson, sometimes sometimes being in the born in the right place at the right time matters a lot.
Luck, yes.
That was quite interesting. Turning to the book itself, never have I read the word perhaps more in a history book. And that was because...
it's fiction.
There just wasn't a lot of history, partly because she was a woman. There wasn't a lot written about the widow Clicquot. And so there are business records about like how many bottles were sold. There are some letters, but like there's a lot that's not known about her. So there's a lot of like, perhaps Barb Nicole read this because it was released in this year and it was, you know, so... But that aside, it was a fascinating story because this story coincides with the French Revolution and then the First Republic for a couple of years and then Napoleon and then the Napoleonic Wars and then the French kings being reinstalled and then the Second Revolution and it's the Second Republic. It's like this broad historical narrative and then this wine story in this book. And so I learned so much about that time in France. And because all these champagne makers were trying to export into these markets where they were also at war with these markets, it was like, you know, she's trying to like make end runs around blockades and like trying to keep what she's doing from Napoleon and also from like the Russian Tsar, and fascinating like historical story and a real lesson. And this is the second business lesson, that the best moments can come from the very worst. And so both Jean-Remy Moe and the widow Clicquot were trying to really open up Russia as a market, and they were desperate and they weren't having a lot of luck, and her top salesman was seen as a spy and was like run out of town in Russia. They just couldn't open Russia up as a market in any meaningful size. She was fast running out of money. She had fired all but one of her sales team. Like, this business was going down the toilet. And the Napoleonic Wars culminate in the Champagne region, and the alliance of like the British and the Russians and the Prussians all fighting the French occupy the Champagne region. And the cellars of a lot of champagne makers get looted, including Jean-Remy Moe, who in the war lost more than 500,000 bottles of champagne, which you think would ruin most. But he was quoted as saying at the time,
distribution.
All these officers who ruin me today will make my fortune tomorrow. All those who drink my wine are salesmen who, on returning to their own country, will make the product.
Yeah.
And make the product they did, because after the war, the legend of like Champagne's wine, the Champagne region's wine, spread across Europe, and it just led to a frenzy after the war. And then it's just a story of like how they kept up with demand, how they managed to export sparkling wine in bottles that were prone to explode, and you know, there's a whole bunch going on there. But yeah, like the absolute worst of times, losing the war, being occupied, having your cellars looted, ultimately led to Champagne being a global brand.
Classic.
Yeah. So, look, the fascinating book, heaps more I can talk about, but I think that probably sums it up and gives you a little bit of a taste of the world of Champagne.
That's epic. So, glad I don't need to read it. Thank you. But fascinating. And, you know, for those that don't know, Veuve Clicquot is owned by LVMH. So, I think it was bought in the mid-80s or something like that. I actually can't remember. Yeah. But, yeah, now owned by LVMH. But, I mean, these are champagne brands that are indestructible.
Mm.
Like, the association they now have with luxury and status and all those, you know, Pommery, Moët, Veuve Clicquot, Hennessy, whatever the other one, Heinsky or whatever it was. Pretty fascinating. Didn't know.
Speaking of these, how powerful these brands are, the history of these brands becomes their moat in and of themselves.
Absolutely.
Like, even if someone creates a heaps better champagne, the idea of, like, Lesky champagne taking on these 100%. Big champagne houses is tough.
The biggest winner is Dom Pérignon.
Why is that?
Well, he didn't start it, but he's credited as the godfather godfather of champagne.
Now, for this month, we're going to go a little bit harder investing in terms of the book. So the Aswath Damodaran interview that we did a couple of weeks ago now, very much worth listening to if you haven't listened to it. Really inspiring conversation. It's inspired me so much that I've picked up one of his books, and that's what I'm going to read this month.
Not one of his university finance textbooks.
probably the easiest of his books to read. So hopefully people come along the journey and read along for this month's book club. The book is called The Little Book of Valuation by Aswath Damodaran. So pick it up. Jump on board, and we'll do this again in a month's time.
Epic. Well, if you do read it, make sure you jump into the Equity Mates Facebook group, and we'd love to hear your thoughts and get you to contribute to the book club as we go throughout the year. But yeah, to echo Ren, if you haven't listened to the Aswath interview, we did it about 2 or 3 weeks ago or thereabouts. It'll be in the feed. It was phenomenal for any level of investor. It was very inspiring. So yeah, make sure you give that a listen. Now, equitymates.com/contact if you'd like to leave a book club recommendation, if you'd like to submit to Pimp My Portfolio, if you'd like to leave a question, it is all there on the website. But Ren, as always, great to chat stocks and markets.
And
our
champagne.
Event is sold out.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
We will be going live here in Sydney in about a week, and we cannot wait. But tomorrow we'll be in your feeds with a buy or sell with Adam. So Ren, we'll leave it there.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.